Excited for the football season? Then don't miss your boost pack courtesy of BetMGM. Log into your BetMGM account today to receive your pro football boost pack. Then, apply the token from the pack to any qualifying pro football wagers, and you'll gain extra winnings and more. It's always fun to cheer for your favorite team and celebrate the game-winning drive. And now you can do that while getting in on the action with BetMGM. Make your bets and play along with the full slate of games like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, live betting options, original bets, and so much more. Log in or sign up today to get your pro football boost pack. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for full terms. 21 plus only. Must be 21 or older to wager. Ohio only. Existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards vary. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A dramatic reading, December. Why drink the water from my hand? Contagious as you think I am? Hey, this is Jay Hudson, good friend of Dean Jason, and you are listening to Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. We are here for part five of a five-part episode series on the albums of 1994.
Give me a word. Give me a sign. Show me where to look. Tell me the what will I find. We're going to let heaven shine down on us on this episode. We're covering Collective Soul's Blue album from 1995. How are we doing this, the 94-95 thing?
Well, that's a little tricky. You kind of snuck this one in here under the radar.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I'm going with Ed Roland on this. He said this is their debut album. Did Mama say this is his debut album? This is his debut album. Except he had one of the biggest songs of 1994.
I can tell you. With absolute clarity, I remember the day that I was driving in my car and I heard Shine come on the radio for the first time.
Really?
And I was blown away. I was like, this is the future of music right here. I was like, this is such an incredible mixture of sounds and styles and vocal changes and guitar changes and rhythm. And I was just like, holy crap, these guys are the new thing.
So I am cheating the system a little bit. Are using Shine to bridge the 94 to 95 gap.
Jason needs to know the rules so he can break them.
When we started this, it was Live versus Collective Soul, and then we added a bunch of albums from 94.
Yeah, that is true.
Anyway, so we're diving into Collective Soul's Blue album. They did have an album before, but basically that was a collection of demos.
I owned it.
I owned it too.
I owned the cassette.
Did you really? The cassette?
Yeah, I had the cassette. So unfortunately, Dayton wasn't able to join us today. We miss him. We wish him the best. Please go check out Docking Bay 77. We will be listening to that in next episode so we can get on what he's doing over there.
Yep. Dayton, we miss you. We'll see you next time. So he said at this time he was an older guy and he was trying to get a job as a songwriter.
Just something of note before we jump into the songs, and I'm really anxious to get in there. A couple of these guys were pretty old when they really hit it big. I mean, we talked about Ed Roland. I mean, he was 30, almost 31 when he finally hit it and they finally got signed. Gavin Rossdale was 29 years old, almost 30, when Bush finally hit it in America. Like, they were still playing the flea-infested pubs in the UK to nobody. He said they'd used to go out and go, all right, here's another one you've never heard of. And then a year later, they have played to more American audience members than any band in the world. So what I've noticed about these guys, every single one of these lead singers, is they're all very down to earth. Say what you will about the music of the 80s, but Nikki Sixx is kind of an asshole.
Right.
Vince Neil's kind of an asshole.
Sure.
David Lee Roth, Even Eddie Van Halen of from course. Time to time.
100%.
These guys all seem to be regular guys who just happen to be big rock stars.
Ed Roland, I heard his wife talking about this. Mm-hmm. She says they have to be the most unknown rock band in history. She says they'll be in Home Depot and Shine will come on overhead and they kind of look at each other and like, nobody knows who we are.
Wouldn't that be the best of all worlds?
It really
though?
Would, right?
I mean, because I just got done listening to an interview with him and the guy was like, you know, do you have, because they play a lot of shows every year. They play all the time, but it's because he loves it. Because the guy said, if you had to quit working today, would you be tight with money? He's like, no, I don't have to worry about my money. Kids don't have to worry about my money. It's nice. Everybody's set. I want them to work. I want them to go out and, you know, strive and make it on their own. But no, money's not something we worry about anymore.
Before we get into the songs.
Yeah.
And really, the story of Shine is the story of the band.
Well, hold that thought because there's a lot of lead up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the Blue Album came out March 14th, 1995.
Yep.
It really was the first album as a band.
Yep.
Ed says that album one was him in his underwear in his basement making demos.
Yeah.
Album two is with some buddies and they're making music together as a band in the studio.
Yeah.
Only 8 months between the release of those albums.
Yep.
And I saw him, he took out hints, allegations, and things left unsaid, which is what Shine is on.
Yeah.
He looked at it, he's like, in all honesty, there are only 3 songs on this album that would have ever even made a collective soul album. He said, Shine would have, Love Lifted, and Sister Don't Cry. Everything else was just a crap demo. He was just trying to get a job. 3 times platinum, 76 weeks on the Billboard chart, 3 mainstream rock number one hits. All right, D, the first song on the album is called Simple.
What I love about this one is it throws me off at the beginning. Like if I've just bought this album, I'm like, okay, their production quality didn't really go up a lot from the last album.
It's like listening to an old AM radio station.
Yeah, it really is. And then all of a sudden, yeah, blowing it away with some vicious guitar licks. I like it.
I think it's a great kickoff to this album.
Yeah, absolutely. So I found out that his dad, Ed Roland's dad, was an operatic singer. Like he was going to go to Europe and become an opera singer and then basically had a little conversation with God and decided to go into the ministry instead.
So I did know that he was a Southern Baptist preacher and that Ed and his brother Dean were brought up as church rats, you know?
Yeah.
Little Southern Baptist church rats. So, but most of their time was spent at church with their parents, in youth choir, on youth trips and youth camps, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, I would bet $1 million, even though I heard Ed talk about this, the song Shine, in the deep recesses of his brain, it's a rewriting of the song This Little Light of Mine.
Maybe.
From Vacation Bible School.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can see
that. I heard him talk about it. He's like, maybe, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because his mom was musical as well.
Okay.
But even though he was a Southern Baptist preacher, his dad was the one that took him to his first concerts.
That's right.
Took him to see Johnny Cash, took him to see Elton John, took him to see Liberace, which apparently was his dad's mom's favorite singer.
Right. I wish and, my brother George was here.
Yeah, and took him to see the Kinks. So that's a little bit of a switch up there.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I did hear him say that Elton John is really his musical idol.
Yeah, he said his very first album he can remember with clarity buying the Elton John. He got to go to the store, bought the Elton John album. When he put the needle on and your song started playing, he immediately was just like, this is just what I want to do. I want to write songs like Elton John and Bernie Taupin.
Well, that's one of the greatest songs from the 70s, and Elton John's one of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great inspiration. I love that he commits. I mean, that album came out in, I think, 1970. That means he's really young. Like, he's born in the 60s, so he's really young, and he makes the decision at that point, and that's it. He's going to go be a musician. He's going to go be a songwriter, and he doesn't have anything that's going to stop him.
He said his musical influences were, of course, Elton John, Fleetwood Mac, the Eagles. He said it was more California rock.
Yeah. All right, you ready to jump on to song number two?
Song number two is Untitled.
Untitled.
So I'm getting a lot of Aerosmith on this one.
I can see that.
And they opened for Aerosmith. If they hadn't already recorded this album, they were in the midst of putting it together whenever they were going around with Aerosmith. But the lyrics, the style of singing, and that guitar riff, all very 70s Aerosmith style. Why should I stop battling to you?
We're going to talk about a song that he wrote using a guitar that Joe Perry gave to him here in a few minutes.
It's fantastic. I told you, though, I was like, this is my hot take on this one. The riff is so similar to the riff in the first song. I feel like it was a bad decision to put this as the second song right after that one. Like, throw December in between these two and you're mixing it up and you've got some variety. But with the hammer on and pull offs that they're doing, the very similar speed and sound of the guitar, they're like, the second song's just a little too similar to the first song. Would have been better if it had been like song number three or four.
They like to do a lot of the stops and starts in the songs. I find that really interesting. December comes to a crashing halt before it revamps up into something amazing. This song comes to a stop as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned that he plays guitar, obviously. He's played with Joe Perry's guitar, right?
Yep.
He did not start off as a guitar player. Started off in the school band as a clarinet player. He actually told his parents, I want to be a cornet player. But obviously they must have misunderstood him because they came back and handed him a clarinet.
You know, we talked about his dad being a pastor, and I saw somebody online who actually reached out to him on Facebook and said, I just wanted to send this picture to you. I'm a big fan of Collective Soul, but your dad married my parents.
Oh, cool.
And here's a picture on their wedding day. And there he is standing right there, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know, he knew his son wanted to be a singer in a rock band. And as, you know, during those times, a record burning party was not off the table for Baptist churches, right?
Yeah, it's the 70s.
And I think his congregation was kind of like, you know, hey, are you doing this? Are we doing this? And he said his dad could not bring himself to participate because of his son's love for rock music.
Nice.
And Ed said that was really a big validation, a big endorsement of me as a singer.
Fantastic.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that is great.
Untitled is, I like it. I don't skip it. The title, Untitled, is dumb to me.
Right.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
They asked him why he named it this, and he said, well, I didn't have any words. I didn't know what to call it.
Right, right.
Well, keep trying, dude. I mean, right. there's something.
There's at least two dozen words in the song. Just pick one of those words.
Right, exactly.
Right. All right, you ready to move on to song number three?
Song number three, the first of the heavy hitters.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. This song,
Batting Cleanup.
This is The World I Know. This is one of the most beautiful songs of the 1990s.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
Guarantee make out list song of the 90s.
This is a little sad for me. This is a bit of a downer for me to be a make out song. I mean, I enjoy listening to it, and I like sad songs, but I don't know that I'd be like touching and feeling on this particular song. But to be fair, he wrote it for his girlfriend, who then, of course, later became his wife, who then, of course, later became his ex-wife. But they were up in New York City. And this was back when New York City was still Crime Central. Said he was thinking about writing a song, walked out of the hotel that they were staying in and just walked around the streets for an hour and came back in and wrote down his thoughts. And that's how we get this song.
He wrote this song to impress a beautiful woman.
Yeah. So I walked on high and I stepped to the edge.
The world I know. Oh, it's the world I know. impressed her so much that she married him.
Yeah.
We'll get to the rest of the story here in a minute.
Yep.
This song hits number 19 on the Hot 100. It's number one on the Hot Rocks chart, one of three from this album. And David Cook from American Idol won American Idol by singing this song.
Nice. That's good. That's good.
He said he never watched American Idol, was flipping channels, came across, and he's like, holy crap, they're singing The World I Know.
Uh-huh.
And the dude won American Idol by singing this song.
Oh, that's got to, that just makes your heart warm. That's fantastic.
Right. Here's the interesting thing about this song to me. During the recording sessions, at the last moment, Ed was like, I don't like the words. I'm going to change the words. And he said that it was just one of the engineers in the studio is like, Ed, no, this is a beautiful song. This is a number one hit. Don't touch this song. And kind of talked him off of the edge.
Oh.
He even gave his name, Greg Archilla, right?
To see the world below?
Yeah. This song peaked at number 19, like I said, March 9th of 96. Here's your top five on that day.
Okay? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Number five, Missing Everything But the Girl.
Okay.
No.
Nope.
Number four, Nobody Knows by the Tony Rick Project.
Who the heck?
No, I don't know.
All right.
Number three, Not Gonna Cry, Mary J. Blige. No. No.
Okay.
Number two, Sitting Up in My Room, Brandy.
Wow.
And number one, One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men. R&B was big at this time.
Yeah, it was the beginning of the end, I think.
People forget, they think the 90s was all grunge. It was a lot of R&B.
There was a big movement growing that just tidal waved in the 21st century.
I got another funny story for you.
Okay.
Ed was at the mall one time. We talk about how he's the one of the most unrecognized rock stars of all time.
Yeah.
He goes into the Gap to buy a pair of jeans, picks out his jeans, and is standing in line waiting. The clerk who's checking him out is singing The World I Know at the top of his lungs. He said he had to wait for him to calm down to check him out to pay for his jeans. And the guy had no idea who was in front of him.
He didn't know?
No.
He wasn't singing it to him.
No.
He just was having a good time singing his song.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
That's hilarious.
Hey, I'm going to play another song for you real quick.
Okay.
Tell me if you think The World I Know influenced this song.
Okay. Very similar guitar sound for sure. And that came out just a year later.
I think Iris came out in 98.
Okay.
So it was 3 years later.
Yeah. I mean, Goo Goo Dolls, right?
Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
I think you can hear a similarity there.
Very similar sound for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Next song on the album is a song called Smashing Young Man.
This is not a good song, but it's got a good story behind it.
Oh, stop. You're killing me. I think this is a fun song, man.
It's kind of dumb to me. And I think that, I genuinely think they meant it to be dumb. Like, I think that they were making fun of Billy Corgan and they were being dumb on purpose.
I think you're absolutely right. I think this is a complete shot across the bow.
Yeah. Well, so you gotta tell the story on this.
Okay, so when the song Shine comes out in 1994, which we'll talk about in depth here in a second, Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins sues them because he feels like they stole his song called Rhinoceros from the album Gish.
We should listen to Rhinoceros.
Okay, let's listen to it.
Kinda similar, but
right,
not
blatant ripoff.
Not a stolen. I mean, there's a million other songs that we've talked about on this podcast where I was like, oh dang, that's straight up stolen.
Right.
I mean, no, they have a. I would say the Goo Goo Dolls song is closer than Shine is to that song.
I think that's fair. I don't think that's a blatant ripoff. I'm not a musician. There's some similarities, but.
Well, but here's the problem. The Smashing Pumpkins didn't form until like 90, 91, maybe?
So here's the deal, okay? So that song, Rhinoceros, came out in 91.
Uh-huh.
Shine comes out in 94.
Right.
Billy Corgan sues Collective Soul. Ed Roland produces a demo from 1989
of
Shine.
Yeah, because he came up with it in 88. Like, he came up with it. He came home and his, you know, you mentioned his brother is 10 years younger than him. He came home and found his brother had a guitar. He had no idea his brother was even playing guitar at that point. They right. start talking about music and writing songs, and he literally comes up with it there in his brother's bedroom in 88, which is 2 years before Smashing Pumpkins is even a band.
That's right. That's right. I did see online where somebody wrote, you know, it's one of those deals where Billy Corgan was on the internet. He was answering questions from fans. They said, how do you feel about Collective Soul? Now it's like 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. It was like, yeah, 2019.
Yeah. And he's like, F Collective Soul, now and always.
Yeah. I mean, that's
just a lot of hate for that.
I've listened to Billy Corgan do stuff, and I never was a huge fan of him to begin with. But like a lot of the stuff that I've seen him do now, he seems like a kind of down to earth, more normal guy than I, you know, had an impression of in the 90s. But he's got some deep seated and probably ill placed hatred for them. But I
totally agree.
So, as you pointed out, he produces this demo from 89, and that wins the court case for him, right?
Yes.
But obviously, Billy Corgan's not letting this go, and, you know, we'll trash talk him everywhere. And then this album comes along, and Smashing Young Man, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean?
Smirk.
Yeah. You have gone, you're wearing
nothing, you smashing. Clearly, it's a shot back at Billy Corgan from Collective Soul.
Right.
This was the third single released fall of 95. Okay. Next song on the album.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you ready? Are you bracing yourself
for
this one?
I'm ready for it. Let's go.
This song is called December.
Why drink the water from my hand?
This is a fantastic song.
For our listening audience, Dee and I have been friends long before the podcast. And about 2010, I was like, Dee, will you teach me how to play this on guitar? You're a guitar player. I'm not even a guitar player. I just love this song so much. I was like,
did you even own a guitar at that point? Right?
No. And you're like, well, that's kind of like you asking me to show you how to pop a wheelie before you can ride a bicycle.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care. I want to learn how to do this. I can't do it. But you did send me a video of you playing this song.
14 years later. I guess we were covering it. I thought, oh, crap. I forgot I was supposed to learn how to play this for him.
So the funny part is that, as you can clearly hear, Dee is playing it correctly. But there's an interview with Rick Beato and Ed Roland.
He's been playing it wrong.
He's been playing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a super complicated finger-picking thing that he's doing, but there's easier ways to do it. And I understand, you know, sometimes you just want to do it the easy way. You don't have to think and sing at the same time. It's hard.
So I love this song. This is another number one hit on the mainstream rock charts. This reaches number 20 on the Hot 100. But to me, this is one of the biggest songs of 1995.
Best song on the album, Spiking the Football.
I would say this is almost like three different songs, and they don't fully come together. They're like interwoven the last minute and a half of the song.
So it's interesting that you say that, because when they were recording this album, this is the one song that the rest of the band, when he came up with it and he played it for them, they were like, no, we are not recording that song.
Right.
And he was like, what? And now what his plan was when he was writing the song was he wanted to have the same chord progression throughout the song, but come up with different melodies to go over that chord progression. And so as he's playing it for them, all they can hear is the chord progression. All they're like, it's the same four chords over and over. This is terrible. We're not doing this.
But he's like, guys, just trust me. And it goes on to be their biggest hit. One of their biggest hits for sure.
Yeah.
This song was written about their manager when they were fighting with their first manager.
Well, I know that they dropped their manager because he was like screwing them out of money. Yeah.
So they believe that he was taking advantage of them.
Yeah.
You know, when you have this massive number one hit shine, you got people falling all over themselves to sign you.
Yeah.
But you said Ed was savvy by that time because he was 30 years old and not a kid.
Yeah. I mean, he had been growing up in the recording industry, and he had been, you know, he had had the opportunity to speak to all kinds of musicians. I can't wait to tell you the first one he had his first recording session with. I'm excited to tell you about this.
Okay.
But he had heard enough horror stories and was old enough, you know, a mature enough man that he was like, I'm not going to let these guys railroad me on this deal. I mean, something to keep in mind that the record label like signed these guys like on their fourth show. Like it was nuts. Like it really was just crazy. And we'll get to that story, but the record label just kind of like signed them and then it was kind of riding along, and all of a sudden they just showed up with this blue album and they're like, hey guys, we recorded the next album. And the record company was like, great, we're going to make quarter two. And he's like, I don't know what that means, but cool. But like the record company was not involved in the recording of this album at all.
In fact, they wanted to go back and record Hints, Allegations, and Things Left Unsaid.
Yeah.
They thought, well, those are demos. We need to re-record those. And the record company's like, no, we're just going to sell that.
Yeah.
Move on.
I bought it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, their manager at the time was a guy named Bill Richardson. He was fighting with them. He was able to freeze their earnings for a full year.
Yeah.
By the way, at first he didn't have a title for this song. Mm-hmm. And he wanted something better than The End or like Finale. And so he thought, you know, what's another synonym for like The End? And so December is what came to his mind. He wrote a quick bridge, you know,
yeah,
using the word December. When they mix like three different melodies at the end of the song,
yeah,
I mean, it just blows me away. I absolutely love this song. One of my favorite songs from the 90s.
Yeah, great one.
Okay, next song on the album is called Where the River Flows.
I think when I first heard this album back in 95, this was a song that stood out to me. Like, this is the collective soul that I know. Like, this is my collective soul.
Yeah.
I really dig the guitar. Nice, crunchy, punchy guitar. By the way, here's how Ed became a guitar player instead of a clarinet player.
Yeah.
He was hanging out with the jocks and felt comfortable enough to go, you know, guys, I'm going to be a songwriter someday. They didn't give him any trouble. They didn't make fun of him. One of them just said, I got a guitar. You want it? And he's like, sure. So he gave him like this Kmart guitar and an Elvis songbook that had the chords written down in it, and an Eagles songbook that had the chords written down in it. And that's how he learned to play the guitar. And I mean, that's the way it went for me. Like my dad had a guitar there, but it was looking at those songbooks and those chord charts in the songbooks with the songs I knew. It's how I taught myself to play. So that's how he got started on the guitar. Some football player with a Kmart guitar he didn't want anymore.
That's fantastic. I've not heard that story.
Yeah.
So this is the fourth Hot Rocks number one for the band.
Yeah.
Fifth single. This was released March 26, 1996. So this is the fourth number one of the Billboard mainstream rock charts. You had Shine, December, The World That I Know, and Where the River Flows. So this is the song that was written on the guitar given to him by Joe Perry from Aerosmith.
Nice.
So they opened for Aerosmith on like the Get a Grip tour.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about. We went track by track through Get a Grip.
Yeah.
And what a great gig to have. I mean, Aerosmith was huge in 94. You've got one big song called Shine, and Aerosmith's like, yeah, how would you like to open for us?
Yeah.
By the way, they also opened for Van Halen. They got to play Woodstock, and they've got one hit song.
So to this day, Ed Roland is a golfer.
Okay.
Loves to play golf. He lives down in Atlanta, Georgia. Grew up right outside of there, you know, lives there now with his second wife and their kids, but he's a golfer. He even hosts charity golf tournaments for St. Jude's Hospital. I mean, just a great guy. And it all goes back to when they were hanging out with Van Halen, and Eddie comes up to him, you know, early on in the tour, and he's like, "So you golf?" And he's like, "No." He goes, "Well, why don't you come golfing with me tomorrow?" And he's like, "Yes, sir, Mr. Van Halen, right. Sir, of course, yes." Right. And Eddie says, like, all the hotel rooms are the same. It's, to quote Eddie, it's the same bed, it's the same shitter, it's the same TV.
Okay.
And he says, so you go in on these tours, you go into the hotel room, and immediately you're down in the bar. And just, that's not a good place to be. You got to get out. You got to do stuff. So that's why we're going to go play golf. And so he takes him golfing that next day, a smashing young man at just 30 or 31 years old, and now he's been playing for the last 30 years. He said at the time he got his girlfriend some golf clubs, and she's like, "This is a guy's thing. This is like a you hang out with the guys thing."
Uh-huh.
And he's like, "Okay, great. That sounds great." And he said he got too serious about it at one point and realized that he was getting too like angry and frustrated with it. And he realized that the benefit of the game is the fellowship you have with the guys you're playing with. That's his words, fellowship with the guys you're playing with.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
There you go. That's how Ed Roland plays golf.
Okay. Hit stop on your tape player. Kick it out. Flip it over. Side two. Next song is called Gel.
Another great one. Another one. Again, it starts off very much like the first song on the first side. I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, is somebody going to be snapping here? Are we listening to the intro music for a sitcom from the 60s about monsters or something? It's just got this very kind of quirky little...
It's quirky.
...thing going. And then here we go. Just like you wanted, the punchy big chords coming in again.
This is the first single. This was released in January of 95. This was a bridge single. So the record company came to them and said, "I know you're working on the new album. We want to kind of keep this momentum going. Do you have anything?" He's like, "Well, I got this song." Gave it to them. They listened to it and they're like, "Well, if this is just a bridge single, I can't wait to hear the rest of the album."
There you go.
This song reached number 2 on the Hot Rocks chart. This debuted on the Jerky Boys soundtrack. You remember the Jerky Boys?
I do. Making the prank phone calls, yeah?
Yes. They actually got a movie made on the Jerky Boys.
This is Sal Goldstein.
So I think this is a really important song for them because obviously Shine is their best and most important song. But this was the song that proved that they were not a one-hit wonder.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jason, you know, we've been doing this for over 5 years now, the podcast.
That's incredible.
Really? You know why?
Why?
Because we gel.
Because we come together. By the way, this song was written during sound check at Woodstock 94.
Oh, yes. That's great. So he didn't just play Elvis and Eagles. Eventually, he learned some other stuff. He became obsessed with the Cars because, hey, 78, that album of that year was incredible.
Yep.
So he became obsessed with them, and he learned that some of those guys went to the Berklee School of Music. And so as soon as he found that out, he's like, "That's what I'm going to go do. I'm going to go be a guitar player. I'm going to go play guitar at the Berklee School of Music." And so he's poor, but he got a loan from his uncle, the banker, to go to Berklee.
Okay.
Ask me how much Berklee was back then.
How much was it?
$2,500.
I need a loan.
Yeah. No, $2,500 for 6 months because that's how long he was there.
Oh.
So he comes in and he's thinking he's going to be a guitar player. And then he comes in with these real guitar players and he's like, "Okay, I'm going to be a songwriter."
Uh-huh.
Because he's just outmanned on the guitar. And then he runs into his mailman as he's leaving his dorm or whatever one day. And the mailman's like, "Yeah, here's your mail." And he's like, "Oh, hey, thanks." He goes, "You going to school here?" And he's like, "Yep. Yeah, it's going to be a songwriter." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I graduated from here." And he's like, the mailman. Yeah, in his head, he's like the mailman. And he's like, "Wait a minute. What did you say? You're playing an instrument? And he's like, oh, I was, but I think I'm going to be a songwriter instead. And the mailman goes, you should quit right now and go live life. They're not going to teach you how to write a song at Berkeley. Go live life, and that will be how you write songs. And so you know what he did? He quit.
Good for him.
Cliff Clavin changes the fate of a smashing young man.
Yeah, that's a great story, right?
Yeah.
Go live life and write from that.
Yeah.
So he lands a job at the studio, right? And yeah. That's kind of a big win for him, right?
Well, we're talking about the studio. This is back home in Georgia.
After he's left Boston.
Right. He was just a gopher. Like he was the Bon Jovi store. He was the guy that went and got the coffee. He's the guy that swept up at the end. But he would go and talk to the engineer as the engineer was doing stuff and just kind of politely ask him questions about things. And then after he'd worked there for 3 months, the engineer left. And so the owner of the studio is like, well, you want to be the new engineer?
Yeah.
And so he became, from 3 months of just hanging out in the studio, and when I say 3 months of hanging out in the studio, everybody would leave, he would sweep up, and then he would sit there and mess with the system all night long, sleep under the board.
Yes. He talked about how he wrote and recorded his first album using like the 20 seconds left over on the tape that they didn't use. And so he would like clip that and just tape them all together. Oh, and that's how he got the recording tape.
He got a full size reel. That's fantastic. I didn't know that. That's great. So I told you you were going to be excited to hear who his first session was as an engineer.
Yeah. Okay.
RuPaul.
Oh my God.
He said they actually became buddies. He was like, we hit it off. We had a great time. He taught me a lot of stuff about these different musical styles. And he said, and in that studio, being in Georgia, you had all kinds of music coming in. You've got bluegrass, you've got rap, you've got heavy metal, you've got whatever RuPaul is. I mean, you've got it all.
Sure.
So he's getting exposed to all of these things as an engineer and just soaking it up. Now, we will establish here in a bit that Shine is almost literal overnight success. But the time between when Ed Roland dropped out of college and the time when Shine hit is 11 years. So you go back to the old, you know, go back to the old 10,000 hour theory. He is working in the music industry just long enough to become a true expert at his craft. And even with that, he doesn't know which song is going to be the song that breaks them. But I'll tell you that story here in a second.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Next song in the album is called She Gathers Rain. Okay, another guitar-heavy song. This doesn't capture me quite as much as some of those heavy hitters on the front part of the album.
Yeah.
There's a little lull on the B-side of this album for me.
So this one, to me, has a stronger beat to it. Like, the drums seem more pronounced in this one. Drummer was a guy named Shane Evans.
Right.
He actually was in a band with Ed before Collective Soul, a band called The Marching Two-Step. He said, like, over this 11-year period, he would be a part of different bands and stuff, but as time went on, people they'd fizzle out. And this is so crazy. He was signed up to go play on a cruise ship a month before Shine hit. So here's how it happens, right? He's recorded probably 100 demo, you know, over 100 demos in this 11-year time period. And he's just he just never gives up. He sends them to radio stations. He sends them to record companies. He even got a letter from a guy. He didn't say his name, but he said, never send me another piece of your music. You're a horrible singer and a horrible songwriter.
What?
And he didn't quit after that. He didn't quit. He gave cassettes to Sting and to Rick Ocasek.
Oh.
But it's just crazy. In this process, he thought, okay, he had these songs that he thought were going to do well, but he had this one that he thought was going to make it, right? The song was called Good Night, Good Guy.
So Good Night, Good Guy is off Hints, Allegations, and Things Left Unsaid. And it sounds a lot like She Gathers Rain.
Yeah. So his plan is his brother like we said, 10 years younger. He's at college at Georgia State. And so he wants him to give it to the little college radio station there to play the cassette, right?
Yeah.
And so his brother takes the cassette to the radio station, and just like Quincy Jones back when they were recording Thriller, they put in the wrong side. And the side that they put in is just extra, right? It's just a cassette. He just had an extra song on the other one. The song that was on the other side was Shine. Yes. And so at that point, they've played the wrong song. The song finishes and the switchboard lights up and everybody is like, what was that? Play that again. And then, I mean, the dominoes start falling like crazy. So then this radio station in Orlando starts playing it. Somehow they hear about it. And he had already sent them the tape. Right. He's sending them out, right? He's sending them to anybody that he can.
Right.
And so they start playing it. And then this the university is having this Christmas party. And they're like, hey, you guys are awesome. Come play with us. And they don't know that you guys is Ed Roland.
Right.
Like, he did the whole thing on his own, right? But his brother has this little frat band. And so he's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We'll get together. We'll figure out, you know, half an hour worth of songs, you know. We'll do three original songs. And then we'll just do a bunch of covers. And it'll be fine. And you guys can play the songs that you play. And I'll just get off the stage. It'll be fine. It'll be fine, right?
And right.
So they practice together a couple of times before this Christmas party. They play one song, and then they play Shine, and then the place goes nuts.
Really?
This is a college Christmas party at Georgia State, and they're losing their minds. And he starts looking around at the band like, what is going on? What, this is crazy. So he said, let's play it again. And so they played it again, and the crowd went nuts again. They played it six times that night, and
oh
the
gosh.
Crowd went crazy every single time. So it's hitting in Orlando. It's obviously tapped a nerve. I mean, I told you how I felt when I heard it. And so they get booked to play a bigger show down in Florida, and they're in their van driving to this show, and they're doing the top five most requested songs of the week. And it's like Stone Temple Pilots, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, King's X. Oh, and at number one, this band out of Atlanta called Collective Soul. The song's called Shine. He said they pulled the van over to the side of the road, and he got out and he just didn't know what to do. He was like mystified. He's like, these other guys, you know, they're all in their early 20s and they're going nuts. They're like so excited and cheering
right,
for him and
right.
excited to be a part of this band. And he's just like, none of this makes sense. It's
what
just this
happening?
Weird, surreal moment. And yeah.
That's a fantastic story. Shine was the song of the summer of 94 for me. That's such a great story. Okay. Next song on the album is a song called When the Water Falls.
This has the feel of another band in that area. Maybe they were out of Florida. The Dolphins Make Me Cry. I bet they were out of Florida. Hootie and the Blowfish.
South Carolina.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
absolutely sounds like Hootie and the Blowfish, right?
Yeah.
This song sounds like, it's like a hippie song, right?
Huh?
Like when I'm driving in the Colorado mountains in the summertime and heck I see the Columbine on the side of the hill and I'm like, I got the local radio station on. It's just a hippie song. I like it. I don't skip it. It's not a heavy hitter, but I like it.
Yeah. By the way, they were friends with the guys from Hootie and the Blowfish before either one of them were famous.
Love it.
He said the atmosphere was much like, you know, when we talked about Pearl Jam and Nirvana, the Seattle scene where all the bands supported each other instead of being adversarial. He said it was the same kind of thing that, like, when each band got signed, they were both genuinely excited for each other. And I think they're touring with them right now.
Hootie and the Blowfish went from nobody to everywhere overnight. You might hear the rest of that story if you come listen to our Best of 94. All right, I want to just drop in a little bit of gossip right here, okay? So okay. The members of the band, when Ed got signed and had the hit Shine, he had to gather a band, right?
Right.
So he grabs his younger brother and some of his friends, and among that, you've got Shane Evans. You've got Will Turpin, who sang in the church choir with him at his church.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you grab your friends, right? You grab the guys you want to hang out with, right? Yeah. And they grabbed a guitar player named Ross Childress. Now, I couldn't find anything super solid on the internet. However, Ed married a woman named Stephanie Bully. That's who he wrote The World I Know for in 94.
Yep. They have a kid together.
They were married for 5 years.
Yep.
They divorced in 2001. Ross Childress was kicked out of the band in 2001, and I heard somebody talking about this, and he said, well, the one thing you can't do is sleep with the boss's wife.
Yeah. You will not probably ever hear the full story on that,
right?
Because you listen to Ed Roland talk, and there becomes a point that he very diplomatically refuses to answer those kinds of questions.
That's right.
He just says, I'm just not going to talk about that.
Right. I did see him on YouTube, though.
Uh-huh.
You can go look at this. Somebody's holding up a sign that says, like, you know, where's Ross? And he says a bunch of non-Christian words to this guy and kicks him out.
Wow.
So no love lost there at all.
Right.
And in fact, Ross Childress gets a co-writing credit for The World I Know.
Huh?
Ed's like, he didn't write it. He didn't do anything. He didn't even play on that track. But I gave him songwriting credit because I was trying to keep everybody in the band happy.
Yeah.
And the interview I saw, he looked directly at the camera and says, and you know it's true. So
what I heard him say, number one, about the first marriage was being on the road was probably difficult on the relationship. And had they spent a little more time dating before they got married, that it probably would have been a better result for the relationship. That was an incredibly diplomatic way to handle that.
That's right.
He said she is a great mother. And as far as Ross and then also Shane, who was the other one who was asked to leave the band, what he said was, well, like I said, Atlantic signed me, not Collective Soul. So these guys technically were my employees. And there was a morals clause in our employment contract. And I don't need to go into detail about it, but they both had issues with that morals clause that caused them to not be in the band anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I know with Shane Evans, it was drugs.
Yeah.
Which I think he's cleaned up. And I think he was with them whenever they got inducted.
Georgia Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. Yeah.
I do think they're still friendly with everybody but Ross. He said I knew these guys from Cub Scouts, baseball, and church. That betrayal cuts deep.
It does. That's true.
Okay. Next song on the album is called Collection of Goods. Resonate and come to save and grace separate from the guys. Okay.
I feel like you're already being defensive and I haven't even said anything.
No. This one I moved past pretty quickly.
Oh, geez. Yeah. This one I started looking. I'm like, how many more songs are on the album after this?
Yeah, this is not my favorite song.
This is 100% a skipper for me, for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get on past this one.
Yeah, let's jump past.
All right. Next song on the album is a song called Bleed.
Tomorrow will be
I love the intro on this one. They're tapping into the Who, right? This is Pete Townsend all over the place.
Okay.
But then they leave that behind. And the rest of the song is not as interesting as that intro was.
I love this song. This is a top three song in the album for me. Absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. I think the guitar solo is amazing in this. Everything is good except for the one word chorus. It loses its punch because he just says bleed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the story behind this song blows my socks off. Do you know the story behind this one?
Tell me.
Okay. So we talked about how Ed's dad is a pastor.
Right.
So when you're a pastor, people come to you for spiritual advice. They got problems. I need some help with this. I'm not doing well. Can you help me? He said his dad wasn't at home one day and a girl came to the house and was going to commit suicide. And Ed was like, my dad's not home, but I'll see what I can do.
Wow.
And so he sat down with her and kind of held her hand and talked her out of it. And this song was written about that moment.
Dang. Walked in the world, she cries to me.
So
that's okay.
The lyrics say, I don't know why she cries to me. She keeps her pain as company, but it's only time before we all must bleed. Absolutely one of my favorite songs on the album. I absolutely love it. Ed himself said he was disappointed with the final version of the song.
Yeah.
But yet liked it too much to leave it off.
See that?
So, okay. Last song on the album.
Yeah.
The song's called Reunion.
Change will come. The change is here.
Okay, this is the most gospel-y, most Southern Baptist song on the entire album.
Really? I was thinking Pink Floyd.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
It's gospel
got,
to me.
It's got a comfortably numb. There's definitely got that gospel chorus behind it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not Pink Floyd. It's definitely a collective soul take on that sound. But whatever it is, I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm coming home.
It's a good way to end the album for sure.
I agree.
And I'm thinking back to this last track where you were like, it didn't come out the way that he wanted it to. We haven't talked. I mean, usually, you know, when a band gets signed, they're like, okay, who do we put these guys with? You know, Weezer got to go with Rick Ocasek, you know, and Live got to go with the guy from Talking Heads, Jerry Harrison. And with this one, this guy is listed as the producer is Matt Cerlytic. He would go on to do lots of stuff. I mean, he worked with a ton of fantastic bands, Matchbox 20, worked with David Cook to help him win the American Idol thing. I mean, he's a prolific guy, but at the time, he was just like a jazz musician in a jazz band that Ed Roland knew and liked and trusted.
Okay.
Ed is really the one that produced this album. He just had Matt there with him to be the one, you know, to be honest with him and help guide him through the process because most important quality, he trusted him. And on the Pink Floyd note, Matt Cerlytic, remember that movie, The Faculty from like back in 1999?
Yes.
You remember how the supergroup Class of 99 covered Another Brick in the Wall?
Yes.
He was a member of that super group.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. So we talked about how this song is really 95, but we cheated it back into 94 because of the incredible success of Shine.
That's right.
And, I mean, heck, we mentioned in one of our previous episodes, they were at Woodstock 94 playing with Live. playing with King's X. He said they were following King's X around, and King's X finally, it's like, what do you guys want? Like, we just really like your band.
That's great.
We just wanted to hang out with you. Oh, you're my so gosh. Cool.
That is too cool.
Yeah. So they were there. They were there when the mudslinging. Actually, I don't know if they were there when the mudslinging happened. I don't know if they were the same day or not. But you got to think, these guys a month earlier weren't even a band together, and then they're playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people.
So just a few more notes on Shine. This song hit number 11 in August of 94. Do you want to hear the 10 songs that are better than Shine?
You know I do.
Okay. Number 10, Back.
Wait. If Ace of Base is on here, I'm going to eat my shoe.
Okay. Get out your fork and knife.
I thought so.
Because it's a list of all that crappy pop stuff, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So number 10 is Back and Forth by Ailea. Number 9 is Regulate by Warren G.
Yeah, we heard them last week. Yep.
Number 8 is Anytime, Anyplace by Janet Jackson.
No, again.
Number 7 is Don't Turn Around by Ace of Base. Number 6 is Functified by DeBrat.
Yep, that was on that list too.
Number 5 is Can You Feel the Love Tonight by Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 is Wild Night by John Cougar. Number 3 is Fantastic Voyage by Coolio. Number 2 is I Swear by All for One.
Told you, man, they just spent like a few months there at the number one spot.
And number one is Stay by Lisa Loeb.
Disappointing America.
I got a couple of those stories for you on this.
Okay.
So in the song Shine, you have the breakdown and you have the big, yeah, right? Ed says, I've been playing that song in concert for 30 years now, and I've never once said yeah. He goes, the crowd, that's their job. They do the yes, right?
That was great.
But he said, when I was recording the song Shine, I didn't have any fancy equipment. Mm-hmm. And so in order to kind of get that vocal effect, I took the toilet paper roll out of the bathroom and spoke through the toilet paper roll to say, yeah.
Effective.
Last story I got for you on Collective Soul. He's having dinner. He's a sports guy. He's at dinner with a bunch of baseball players. They're in Arizona. His dad calls him while they're eating dinner. He answers the phone. He's like, Dad, what's going on? He's like, are you watching David Letterman? He's like, first of all, no. Secondly, why are you up so late watching David Letterman? His dad says, Dolly Parton is on David Letterman, and she's singing Shine. Ed was like, you talk about flattered. He goes, one of the greatest songwriters on the planet thinks enough of our song to perform it on David Letterman.
Yeah, I love it. Dolly Parton's going to, if she finds a religious bent in the song, she's going to grab onto it. But yeah, she does a great job with this one. Okay, I got one more story for you.
Okay.
So how he met his second wife. We've now had three stories where he's friends with the jocks, right? Like that's how he got his guitar.
Yep.
That's who he's hanging out with it when his dad calls him to tell him Dolly Parton's playing Shine. I guess he lived in like the same apartment complex as one of these guys. I mean, they're, you know, professional athlete and professional musician. They got a nice place or whatever.
Right.
But he said, I was raised in the South. I just leave my door open.
Right.
And he said, so some of these football guys would get hurt and need a place to stay, and they would go over to this other guy's house, and I guess he didn't, you know, he didn't keep it up or whatever, and so he'd be like, well, go over to Ed's house. He's got a good TV. Go hang out over there. And so he just made friends with all of these professional football players. And so then it became like Ed was just the kind of go-to guy whenever friends and family were coming into town or needed something done. And so one day he gets a call from one of these guys and they're like, hey, I got a couple friends. They're coming by to pick up the tickets. I left them for you to give to them or whatever. Right. And he's like, okay, cool. And he's thinking it's just, you know, a couple of dudes coming by. And so he's hanging out in his boxers and he gets the doorbell ring and he opens the door and it's this lady and she's with a date. But he was like struck by how good looking she was.
Okay.
And so I guess he got her number in that process. And like he leaves and goes and tours Europe for a little while and comes back. And then he immediately calls her up and it's like, hey, I really would like to, you know, I'd like to see you. Would you like to go watch a show with me, you know? And so she's like, no. And he said, because he said she has no idea about pop culture. She had no idea who I was.
Right. Right. Right.
And so he says, I wasn't going to let it go. So I said, I tell you what, I'm going to go to the bar downstairs. I'll see you when you get there. And he went down there.
Nice.
And he waited for 3 hours. And she showed up after 3 hours. And he said they have not been apart since then.
It is all about persistence, right?
Yes.
I love this guy.
Yes, he really is. Okay, we are at the end of our albums of 1994 journey. Now, we have a bonus episode coming next week where we're going to give you our top five songs that are not on any of these albums.
That's right.
Because there were a huge amount of fantastic albums and songs that came out, not Ace of Base, in 1994.
I would love to drop Ace of Base.
Oh, I will punch you right in the cooter. Anyway, but now that we've reached the end of five albums, we haven't done our, you know, which one's the best thing.
Right.
We got to rank them.
Yeah. I'm going to go first because I told you before we were recording tonight that these were just a little bit off bullseye for me in 94. I was listening to Aerosmith and Van Halen, and I got into Boston a little bit. So I knew the hits. I didn't know the deep cuts. So I've really enjoyed this process. I'm glad that we've spent 5 weeks in 94. So my number five album is Weezer. Like it. I enjoy them. I think they're a fun band. I think there are other albums that were better than the Blue Album for me personally. Number four on my list is Bush. Love the hits, love the rock, love the grittiness. I didn't own it, but you've opened my eyes to it. Number three is Green Day. They wrote some banger songs that really impacted 94. I'm not a punk guy, but gosh, their pop melody sensibilities make that so enjoyable. Number two is Live. Just some really great songs. I have a special space in my heart for the Oklahoma City song, the Oklahoma City bombing song, Lightning Crashes. And so I have a lot of love for that album. And then, of course, Collective Soul's Blue Album is one of my favorite albums from the 90s. It was never going to be knocked off its perch. D, what do you got for me?
Okay, Collective Soul. If we were talking about hints, allegations, and things left unsaid, it would be higher on my list. As I said, I heard that song, and it was a momentous moment for me. This album is good. The hits, the singles are all good, but it feels like they kind of knocked the edges off of the original album that I enjoyed. I liked those edges at that time, and so that's why I'm putting it at number five. At number four for me is Green Day. I agree with you. I'm not much of a punk guy, and this is a commercial punk thing, but I mean, some of these songs are just, they stand the test of time. At number three is the Weezer album. They had a sound that was incredibly unique. Like all of these, we talked about 94 being just this moment where everything that was big was different. And these guys took different to a new place. I mean, short of maybe Devo, which I was never a big fan of, I'd never seen a nerd band before. And to me, these guys gave me something that I was like, wow, they've really come up with something new and unique. So I really like the Weezer Blue album. And then I go in with the two that were my albums from that era. Number two is 16 Stone by Bush. It is a fantastic album. I own the album. We covered the songs, and there are some songs that are maybe not skippers, but not great songs on the album, which is why number one for me, and I kind of saw this coming, is Throwing Copper, because there is literally not a bad song on the album. It's fantastic from beginning to end. Every single song is meaningful, and I will sing along to every one of them as long as I live.
This is why we do this podcast, because we are not in agreement. and that's great, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we do it. But you have moved the needle for me on these albums. So we want to hear from you. What are your top five? Like this little run from 94 plus the Blue Album.
Collective Soul Blue Album. There's two The Blue Albums.
That's true. So hit us up. We would love to hear from you. What's your top five of these albums that we've covered?
Guys, can't tell you how much we appreciate you guys listening in every week. If this is your first time to listen, we also have a Patreon page where you can go and have access to a whole slew of special episodes just for our Patreon members, where we cover one-hit wonders and some other fun songs. You can join for free. You can listen to the episodes for as little as $5 a month. And it's, I think, some of our best episodes. If you're not up for that, no problem. If you wouldn't mind, please leave us a review. Please leave us a 5-star rating. Helps get us up into the face of other listeners so that they can tune in as well. Can't tell you how much we appreciate you guys and going on with us on this journey. There's just one little epilogue left, and that's next episode when we talk about the top 5 songs from 1994.
Come back next week for that epic top 5.
Excited for the football season? Then don't miss your boost pack courtesy of BetMGM. Log into your BetMGM account today to receive your pro football boost pack. Then apply the token from the pack to any qualifying pro football wagers, and you'll gain extra winnings and more. It's always fun to cheer for your favorite team and celebrate the game-winning drive. And now you can do that while getting in on the action with BetMGM. Make your bets and play along with the full slate of games like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, live betting options, original bets, and so much more. Log in or sign up today to get your pro football boost pack. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for full terms. 21 plus only. Must be 21 or older to wager. Ohio only. Existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards vary. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.